You call Nebraska settled? Clara asked. Well, you're here. It won't last long. Pretty soon it'll be nothing but schoolhouses. With that, he mounted and tipped his hat to them, turned toward the Platte. The two women stood where they were until the sound of the hoofbeats faded. Lorena felt wrong. Part of her felt she should have gone with him, to look after him, but she knew that was foolish. Gus, if anyone, could look after himself. She was dry-eyed and felt blank, but Clara cried, tears born of vexation, long affection, and regret. He always was stubborn like that, she said, attempting to control herself. He left so quick, Lorena said. Do you think I should have gone? I don't know what's best. No. I'm glad you stayed, Clara said. You've had enough rough living. Not that it can't be rough around here, but it won't be as rough as Montana. She put her arm around the girl as they turned toward the house. Come on in, she said. I'll show you where to sleep. We've got a nice little room that might suit you.
Chapter 89.
When Augustus returned without Lorena, Dish Boget felt deeply unhappy. It shocked him that Gus would leave her. Though he had been constantly jealous while she was traveling with Gus, at least she was there. In the evening, he would often see her sitting outside the tent. He dreamed about her often. Once he had even dreamed that she was sleeping near him. In the dream, she was so beautiful that he ached when he woke up. That Gus had seen fit to leave her on the Platte made him terribly irritable. Newt was happy with his new horse, which he named Candy. It was the first real gift he had ever been given in his life. And he talked to anyone who would listen of the wonderful woman on the Platte who knew how to break horses and conduct picnics, too. His enthusiasm soon caused the other hands to be jealous, for they had accomplished nothing except a drunk in Ogallala, and had missed the nice picnic and the girls. Though confident that he had done the right thing in leaving Lorena, Augustus soon found that he missed her more than he had expected to. He missed Clara, too, and for a few days was in a surly mood. He had grown accustomed to sleeping late and sitting outside the tent with Lorena in the mornings. Alone on the long plain, with no cowboys to disturb her, she was a beautiful companion, whereas the cowboys who gathered around Pocampo's cook fire every morning were far from beautiful in his view. It was high summer, the days blazing hot almost until the sun touched the horizon. The cattle were mulish and hard to move, stopping whenever possible to graze or simply to stand. For several days they trailed west along the Platte, but when the river curved south toward Colorado, Call pointed the herd northwest. Pocampo hated to leave the river. The morning they left it, he lingered behind so long with a wagon that the herd was completely out of sight. Lippy, who rode on the wagon, found this fact alarming. After all, they were an Indian country, and there was nothing to keep a few Indians from nipping in and taking their scalps.
"What are we waiting on?" Lippy asked. "We're 3 miles behind already."
Pocampo stood by the water's edge, looking across the Platte to the south. He was thinking of his dead sons, killed by a blue duck on the Canadian. He didn't think often of his sons, but when he did, a feeling of sadness filled him, a feeling so heavy that it was an effort for him to move. Thinking of them in their graves in New Mexico made him feel disloyal, made him feel that he should have shot himself and been buried with them. For was it not the duty of a parent to stay with the children? But he had left, first to go south and kill his faithless wife, and now to the north, while Blue Duck, the killer, still rode free on the Llano. Unless someone had killed him, which Pocampo doubted, Lippy's fears about Indians did not move him. The sight of the flowing water moved him, stirring feelings in him which, though sad, were deep feelings. They made him want to sing his saddest songs. He finally turned and plodded after the herd, Lippy following at a slow walk in the wagon, but Pocampo felt they were wrong to leave the river. He became moody and ceased to have pride in his cooking, and if the cowboys complained, he said nothing. Also, he grew stingy with water, which irritated the cowboys, who came in parched and dusty, dying for a drink. Pocampo would only give them a dipperful each.
"You'll wish you had this water when you drink your own piss," he said to Jasper one evening.
"I ain't planning on drinking my own piss or anybody else's either," Jasper said.
"You have not been very thirsty, then," Poe said. "I once drank the urine of a mule. It kept me alive."
"Well, it couldn't taste much worse than that Ogallala beer," Needle observed. "My tongue's been peeling ever since we was there."
"It ain't what you drank that causes your tongue to peel," Augusta said. "That's the result to who you bedded down with."
The remark caused much apprehension among the men, and they were apprehensive anyway, mainly because everyone they met in Ogallala assured them they were dead men if they tried to go to Montana. As they edged into Wyoming, the country grew bleaker. The grass was no longer as luxuriant as it had been in Kansas and Nebraska. To the north were sandy slopes where the grass only grew in tufts. Dietz ranged far ahead during the day, looking for water. He always found it, but the streams grew smaller and the water more alkaline.
"Near as bad as the Pecos," Augusta said.
Carl seemed only mildly concerned about the increasing dryness. Indeed, Carl was cheerful, easier on the men than was his wont. He seemed relaxed and almost at ease with himself.
"Have you cheered up because I left Lori behind?"
Augustus asked as they were riding together one morning. Far to the south, they saw a black line of mountains. To the north, there was only the dusty plain.
"That was your business," Carl said. "I didn't tell you to leave her behind, though I'm sure it's the best thing."
"I think we ought to have listened to our cook," Augusta said. "It's looking droughty to me."
"If we can make the Powder River, I guess we'll be all right," Carl said.
"What if Jake lied to us? What if Montana ain't the paradise he said it was? We'll have come a hell of a way for nothing."
"I want to see it," Carl said. "We'll be the first to graze cattle on it. Don't that interest you?"
"Not much. I've watched these goddamn cattle graze all I want to."
The next day, Dietz came back from a scout looking worried.
"Dry as a bone, Cap'n," he said.
"How far did you go?"
20 miles. More?"
The plain ahead was white with heat. Of course, the cattle could make 20 miles, though it would be better to wait a day and drive them at night.
"I was told if we went straight west, we'd strike Salt Creek and could follow it to the Powder," Carl said.
"It can't be too far."
"It don't take much to be too far in this heat," Augusta said.
"Try going due north," Carl said. Dietz changed horses and left. It was well after dark when he reappeared. Carl stopped the herd, and the men lounged around the wagon playing cards. While they played, the Texas bull milled through the cows, now and then mounting one. Augustus kept one eye on his cards and one eye on the bull, keeping a loose count of his winnings and of the bull's.
"That's 6 he's had since we started playing," he said. "That sucker's got more stamina than me."
"More opportunity, too," Alan O'Brien observed. He had adjusted quite well to the cowboy life, but he still could not forget Ireland. When he thought of his little wife, he would break into tears of homesickness, and the songs he sung to the cattle would often remind him of her. When Dietz returned, it was to report that there was no water to the north.
"No antelope, Captain," he said.
The plains of western Nebraska had been spotted with them.
"I'll have a look in the morning," Carl said. "You rest, Dietz."
He found he couldn't sleep, and rose at 3 to saddle the hell bitch. Pocampo was up, stirring the coals of his cook fire, but Carl only took a cup of coffee.
"Have you been up here before?" he asked.
The old cook's wanderings had been a subject of much speculation among the men. Pocampo was always letting slip tantalizing bits of information. Once, for example, he had described the Great Gorge of the Columbia River. Again, he had casually mentioned Jim Bridger. "No," Pocampo said. "I don't know this country, but I'll tell you this. It is dry. Water your horse before you leave." Call thought the old man rather patronizing. He knew enough to water a horse before setting off into a desert. "Don't wait supper," he said. All day he rode west, and the country around him grew more bleak. Not fit for sheep, Call thought. Not hardly fit for lizards, in fact. A small gray lizard was the only life he saw all day. That night he made a dry camp in sandy country where the dirt was light-colored, almost white. He supposed he had come some 60 miles and could not imagine that the herd would make it that far, although the hell bitch seemed unaffected. He slept for a few hours and went on, arriving just after sunup on the banks of Salt Creek. It was not running, but there was adequate water in scattered shallow pools. The water was not good, but it was water. The trouble was the herd was nearly 80 miles back, a 4-day drive under normal conditions, and in this case the miles were entirely waterless, which wouldn't make for normal conditions. Call rested the mare and let her have a good roll. Then he started back and rode almost straight through, only stopping once for 2 hours' rest. He arrived in camp at mid-morning to find most of the hands still playing cards. When he unsaddled the mare, one of Augustus's pigs grunted at him. Both of them were lying under the wagon, sharing the shade with Lippy, who was sound asleep. The Shoat was a large pig now, but travel had kept him thin. Call felt it was slightly absurd having pigs along on a cattle drive, but they had proven good foragers as well as good swimmers. They got across the rivers without any help. Augustus was oiling his rifle. "How far did you ride that horse?" he asked. "To the next water and back," Call said. "Do you ever see a horse like her? She ain't even tired." "How far is it to water?" Augustus asked. "About 80 miles, Call said. "What do you think?" "I ain't give it no thought at all so far." "We can't just sit here," Call said. "Oh, we could. We could have stopped pretty much anywhere along the way. It's only your stubbornness that kept us going this long. I guess it'll be interesting to see if it can get us the next 80 miles. Call got a plate and ate a big meal. He expected Pocampo to say something about their predicament, but the old cook merely dished out the food and said nothing. Dietz was helping P.I. trim one of his horse's feet, a task P.I. had never been good at. "Find the water, Captain?" Dietz asked, smiling. "I found it, about 80 miles away," Call said. "That's far," P.I. said. They had stopped the cattle at the last stream that Dietz had found, and now Call walked down it a way to think things over. He saw a gray wolf. It seemed to him to be the same wolf they had seen in Nebraska after the picnic, but he told himself that was foolish speculation. A gray wolf wouldn't follow a cattle herd. Dietz finished trimming the horse's hooves and wiped the sweat off his face with a shirt sleeve. P.I. stood silently nearby. Though the two of them had soldiered together for most of their lives, they had never really had a conversation. It had seemed unnecessary. They exchanged information, and that was about it. P, indeed, had always been a little doubtful of the propriety of talking to Negroes, although he liked and respected Dietz and was grateful to him now for trimming the horse's feet. He knew Dietz was a great deal more competent than he was in many areas— tracking, for example. He knew that if it had not been for Dietz's skill in finding water, they might have all starved years before in campaigns on the Llano. He knew, too, that Dietz had risked his life a number of times to save his, and yet standing there, side by side, the only thing he could think of to talk about was the captain's great love for the hell bitch. "Well, he's mighty fond of that horse," he said. "She might kill him yet." "She ain't gonna kill the cap'n," Dietz said. He had the sad sense that things were not right. It seemed they were going to go north forever, and he couldn't think why. Life had been orderly and peaceful in Texas. He himself had particularly enjoyed his periodic trips to San Antonio to deposit money. Texas had always been their country, and it was a puzzle to him why they were going to a country that would probably be so wild there wouldn't even be banks to take money to. "We way up here, and it ain't our country," he said, looking at P. That was the heart of it. Best to stay in your own country and not go wandering off where you didn't know the rivers or the water holes. "Now up here, it's going to be cold," he added, as if that were proof enough of the folly of their trip. "Well, I hope we get there before the rivers start icing," P said. "I always worry about that thin ice." With that, he turned away, and the lengthy conversation was over. By mid-afternoon, Carl came back from his walk and decided that they would go ahead. It was go ahead or go back, and he didn't mean to go back. It wasn't rational to think of driving cattle over 80 waterless miles, but he had learned in his years of tracking Indians that things which seemed impossible often weren't. They only became so if one thought about them too much, so that fear took over. The thing to do was go. Some of the cattle might not make it, but then he had never expected to reach Montana with every head. He told the cowboys to push the cattle and horses onto water and hold them there. Without saying a word, Augustus walked over, took off his clothes, and had a long bath in the little stream. The cowboys holding the herd could see him sitting in the shallow water, now and then splashing some of his long white hair. "Sometimes I think Gus is crazy," Soupy Jones said. "Why is he sitting in the water?" "Maybe he's fishing," Dish Boget said, facetiously. He had no opinion of Soupy Jones and saw no reason why Gus shouldn't bathe if he wanted to. Augustus came walking back to the wagon with his hair dripping. "It looks like sandy times ahead," he said. "Carl, you got too much of the prophet in you. You're always trying to lead us into the deserts." "Well, there's water there," Carl said. "I seen it. If we can get them close enough that they can smell it, they'll go. How far do you think a cow can smell water?" "Not no 80 miles," Augustus said. They started the herd 2 hours before sundown and drove all night through the barren country. The hands had made night drives before and were glad to be traveling in the cool. Most of them expected, though, that Carl would stop for breakfast, but he didn't. He rode ahead of the herd and kept on going. Some of the hands were beginning to feel empty. They kept looking hopefully for a sign that Carl might slacken and let Pocampo feed them, but Carl didn't slacken. They kept the cattle moving until midday, by which time some of the weaker cattle were already lagging well behind. The leaders were tired and acting fractious. Finally, Carl did stop. "We'll rest a little until it starts to get cool," he said. "Then we'll drive all night again. That ought to put us close." He wasn't sure, though. For all their effort, they had covered only some 35 or 40 miles. It would be touch and go. Late that afternoon, while the cowboys were lying around resting, a wind sprang up from the west. From the first, it was as hot as if it were blowing over coals. By the time Carl was ready to start the herd again, the wind had risen, and they faced a full-fledged sandstorm. It blew so hard that the cattle were reluctant to face it. Newt, with the Rainy boys, was holding the drags, as usual. The wind howled across the flat plain, and the sand seemed to sing as it skimmed the ground. Newt found that looking into the wind blinded him almost instantly. He mostly ducked his head and kept his eyes shut. The horses didn't like the sand either. They began to duck and jump around, irritated at being forced into such a wind. "This is bad luck," Augustus said to Carl. He adjusted his bandana over his nose and pulled his hat down as far as it would go. "We can't stop here," Carl said. "We ain't but halfway to the water." "Yes, and some of them'll still be halfway when this blows itself out," Augustus said. Carl helped Lippy and the cook tie down everything on the wagon. Lippy, who hated wind, looked frightened. Pocampo said nothing.
"You better ride tonight," Carl said to Pocampo. "You try to walk, you might get lost."
"We all might get lost tonight," Pocampo said. He took an old axe handle that he had sometimes used as a cane and walked, but at least he consented to walk right with the wagon. None of the men, no strangers to sandstorms, could remember such a sunset. The sun was like a dying coal, ringed with black long before it neared the horizon. After it set, the rim of the earth was blood red for a few minutes. Then the red was streaked with black. The afterglow was quickly snuffed out by the sand. Jasper Fant wished for the thousandth time that he had stayed in Texas. Dish Bogat was troubled by the sensation that there was a kind of river of sand flowing above his head. When he looked up in the eerie twilight, he seemed to see it, as if somehow the world had turned over and the road that ought to be beneath his feet was now over his head. If the wind stopped, he felt, the sand river would fall and bury him. Call told them to keep as close to the cattle as possible, to keep the cattle moving. Any cattle that wandered far would probably starve to death. Augustus thought the order foolish.
"The only way to keep this herd together would be to string a rope around them. We ain't got that much rope," he said.
Shortly after dark, he was proven right. None of the animals wanted to go into the wind. It quickly became necessary for the cowboys to cover their horses' eyes with jackets or shirts. And despite the hands' precautions, little strings of cattle began to stray. Newt tried unsuccessfully to turn back two bunches, but the cattle paid him no mind, even when he bumped them with his horse. Finally, he let them go, feeling guilty as he did, but not guilty enough to risk getting lost himself. He knew if he lost the herd, he was probably done for. He knew it was a long way to water, and he might not be able to find it, even though he was riding the good sorrel that Clara had given him. Carl felt sick with worry. The sandstorm was the worst possible luck, for it slowed down the herd and sapped the animals' strength just when they needed all they had just to reach the water. And yet there was nothing he could do about it. He tried to tie an old shirt around the hell bitch's eyes, but she shook him off so vigorously that he finally let it go. At the height of the storm, it seemed as if the herd might split into fragments. It was hard to see 10 feet, and little bunches of cattle broke off unnoticed and slipped past the cowboys. Dietz, more confident in his ability to find his way around than most, rode well west of the herd, turning back cattle whenever he found any. But it finally became pitch dark, and even Dietz could do nothing. Augustus rode through the storm with a certain indifference, thinking of the two women he had just left. He took no interest in the straying cattle. That was Call's affair. He felt he himself deserved to be in the middle of a sandstorm on the Wyoming plain for being such a fool as to leave the women. Not a man to feel guilty, he was merely annoyed at himself for what he had considered a misjudgment. To Call's great relief, the storm blew itself out in 3 hours. The wind gradually died and the sand lay under their feet again instead of peppering them. The moon was soon visible and the sky filled with bright stars. It would not be possible to judge how many cattle had strayed until the morning, but at least the main herd was still under their control. But the storm and the long drive the day before had taken its toll in energy. By dawn, half the men were asleep in their saddles. They wanted to stop, but again Call pushed on. He knew they had lost ground and was not going to stop just because the men were sleepy. All morning he rode through the herd, encouraging the men to push the cattle. He was not sure how far they had come, but he knew they still had a full day to go. Lack of water was beginning to tell on the horses, and the weaker cattle were barely stumbling along. Dietz alone brought back most of the strayed bunches, none of which had strayed very far. The plain was so vast and flat that the cattle were visible for miles, at least to Augustus and Dietz, the eyesight champions.
"There's a bunch you missed," Augustus said, pointing to the northwest.
Dietz looked, nodded, and rode away. Jasper Fant looked and saw nothing but heat waves and blue sky.
"I guess I need spectacles," he said. "I can't see nothing but nothing." Weak brains breed weak eyesight, Augusta said.
We all got weak brains or we wouldn't be here, Soupy said sourly. He had grown noticeably more discontented in recent weeks. No one knew why. Finally at noon, Call stopped. The effort to move the drags was wearing out the horses. When the cowboys got to the wagon, most of them took a cup of water and dropped sound asleep on the ground, not bothering with bedrolls or even saddle blankets. Pocampo rationed the water carefully, giving each man only 3 swallows. Newt felt that he could have drunk 1,000 swallows. He had never tasted anything so delicious. He had never supposed plain water could be so desirable. He remembered all the times he had carelessly drunk his fill. If he ever got another chance, he meant to enjoy it more. Call let them rest 3 hours and then told them to get their best mounts. Some of the cattle were so weak the cowboys had to dismount and pull their tails and shout at them to get them up. Call knew that if they didn't make it on the next push, they would have to abandon the cattle in order to save the horses. Even after their rest, many of the cattle had their tongues hanging out. They were mulish, reluctant to move, but after much effort on the part of the exhausted men, the drive was started again. Through the late afternoon and far into the night, the cattle stumbled over the plain, the weaker cattle falling farther and farther behind. By daybreak, the herd was strung out to a distance of more than 5 miles, most of the men plodding along as listlessly as the cattle. The day was as hot as any they remembered from South Texas. The distances that had spawned yesterday's wind refused to yield even a breeze, and it seemed to the men that the last moisture in their bodies was poured out as sweat. They all yearned for evening and looked at the sun constantly, but the sun seemed as immobile as if suspended by a wire. Toward midday, many of the cattle began to turn back toward the water they had left 2 days before. Newt, struggling with a bunch, nearly got knocked off his horse by 3 steers that walked right into him. He noticed, to his shock, that the cattle didn't seem to see him. They were stumbling along, wide-eyed. Appalled, he rode over to the captain. "Captain, they're going blind," he said. Call looked grim. "It ain't real blindness. They get that way when they're real thirsty. They'll try to go back to the last water." He told the men to forget the weaker cattle and try to keep the stronger ones moving. "We ought to make the water by night," he said.
"If we make night," Augusta said.
"We can't just stop and die," Call said.
"I don't intend to, but some of the men might. That Irishman is delirious. He ain't used to such dry country."
Indeed, the terrible heat had driven Alan O'Brien out of his head. Now and then he would try to sing, though his tongue was swollen and his lips cracked. "You don't need to sing," Call said. Alan O'Brien looked at him angrily.
"I need to cry, but I've got no tears," he said. "This goddamn country has burned up my tears."
Call had been awake for over 3 days. He had begun to feel confused himself. He knew water couldn't be much farther, but all the same, fatigue made him doubtful. Perhaps it had been 100 miles rather than 80. They would never make it, if so. He tried to remember, searching his mind for details that would suggest how far the river might be, but there were precious few landmarks on the dry plain. And the harder he concentrated, the more his mind seemed to slip. He was riding the Hell Bitch, but for long moments he imagined he was riding Old Ben again, a mule he had relied on frequently during his campaigning on the Llano. Ben had an infallible sense of direction and a fine nose for water. He wasn't fast, but he was sure. At the time, some men had scoffed at him for riding a mule, but Call ignored them. The stakes were life or death, and Ben was the most reliable animal he had ever seen, if far from the prettiest. The men had had the last of Pocampo's water that morning, barely enough to wet their tongues. Pocampo doled it out with severity, careful to see that no one got more than a share. Though the old man had walked the whole distance, using his axe-handle cane, he seemed not particularly tired. Carl, though, was so tired he felt his mind slipping. Try as he might, he couldn't stay awake. Once he slept for a few steps, and then jerked awake, convinced he was fighting again the battle at Fort Phantom Hill. He looked around for Indians, but saw only the thirst-blinded cattle, their long tongues hanging out, their breath rasping. His mind slipped again, and when he awoke next, it was dark. The hell bitch was trotting. When he opened his eyes, he saw the Texas bull trot past him. He reached for his reins, but they were not there. His hands were empty. Then, to his amazement, he saw that Dietz had taken his reins and was leading the hell bitch. No one had ever led his horse before. Carl felt embarrassed. "Here, I'm awake," he said, his voice just a whisper. Dietz stopped and gave him his reins. "Didn't want you to fall and get left, Cap'n. The water ain't far now." That was evident from the quickened pace of the cattle, from the way the horses began to prick their ears. Carl tried to shake off the sleep, but it was as if he were stuck in it. He could see, but it took great effort to move, and he wasn't immediately able to resume command. Augustus loped up, seemingly fresh.
"We better get everybody to the front," he said. "We'll need to try and spread them out when they hit the water. Otherwise, they'll all pile into the first mud hole and trample themselves."
Most of the cattle were too weak to run, but they broke into a trot. Carl finally shook the sleep off and helped Dish and Dietz and Augustus split the herd. They were only partially successful. The cattle were moving like a blind army, the scent of water in their nostrils. Fortunately, they hit the river above where Carl had hit it, and there was more water. The cattle spread of their own accord. Carl had not recovered from his embarrassment at having been led. Yet he knew Dietz had done the right thing. He had still been dreaming of Ben and that hot day at Phantom Hill, and if he had slipped off his horse, he might just have laid there and slept. But it was the first time in his life that he had not been able to last through a task in command of his wits, and it bothered him. All during the night and the next day, cattle straggled into the river. Some of them cattle, Carl had supposed would merely become carcasses, rotting on the trail, yet a day on the water worked wonders for them. Augustus and Dish made counts once the stragglers stopped coming, and it appeared they had only lost 6 head. The Irishman spent most of the day sitting in a puddle in Salt Creek, recovering from his delirium. He could not remember having been delirious and grew angry when the others kidded him about it. Newt, who had planned to drink all day once he got to water, soon found that he couldn't drink any more. He devoted his leisure to complicated games of mumbly peg with Rainy Boys. Dietz went on a scout and reported that the country to the west didn't improve. Grass was as scarce as water in that direction. Far to the north, they could see the outlines of mountains, and there was much talk about which mountains they were.
"Why, the Rocky Mountains," Augustus said.
"Will we have to climb them?" Jasper asked. He had survived rivers and drought, but did not look forward to climbing mountains. "No," Carl said. "We'll go north, up the Powder River, right into Montana."
"How many days will it take now?" Newt asked.
He had almost forgotten that Montana was a real place that they might get to some day.
"I expect 3 weeks, or a little more, and we might hit the Yellowstone," Carl said.
"The Yellowstone already?" Dish Boget said. It was the last river, or at least the last river anyone knew much about. At the mention of it, the whole camp fell silent, looking at the mountains.
Chapter 90.
They rested on the salt for 2 days, giving the animals and the men plenty of time to recover. The men spent much of their time speculating about what lay beyond the mountains and how long it would take to get there. Carl slept a distance out of camp, as was his habit. He knew the men were in a good mood, for he could hear them singing most of the night. Now that he had had the leisure to sleep, he found he couldn't much.
He had always thought his energies equal to any situation, but he had begun to have doubts. A tiredness clung to his bones, but not a tiredness that produced sleep. He felt played out. He wished that they were already in Montana. There were only a few hundred miles left, but it seemed farther to him than all the distance they had come. Trotting back into camp one morning, he saw there was excitement around the cook fire. Several of the men were holding rifles. The sight surprised him, for it had seemed a peaceful night. 12 horses are gone, Captain, Dish Boget said. Indians got 'em. Dietz was looking hangdog, and the Spettle boy could only shake his head. Neither of them had heard a thing, they said.
Well, you boys was singing opera loud enough to wake the deaf. I guess it was just their charity that they didn't take the whole herd. Nobody would have noticed.
Call was vexed. He had been awake almost all night and had no suspicion of Indians. All his years of trying to stay prepared hadn't helped. They must have been good with horses, he said. Dietz felt it was mainly his fault, since it was his job to watch for Indian sign. He had always had a good ear for Indians, but he had sat by the wagon listening to the singing and had heard nothing. They came in on foot, Cap'n, he said. He had found their tracks, at least.
That was bold, Call said. But they ain't on foot now.
He decided to take only Augustus and Dietz, though that left the camp without a really competent Indian fighter, in case the raid was a feint. On the other hand, whoever took the horses might have a good deal of help nearby. If it became necessary to take on an Indian camp, 3 men were about the minimum that could expect to succeed. 10 minutes later, the 3 men were all ready to go. Call was well aware that they were leaving a camp full of scared men. Augustus laughed at the sight.
You boys will get the drizzles if you don't relax, he said. If they got the darn horses, they might decide to come back and get us, Jasper Fant pointed out. They got Custer, didn't they? And he fought Indians his whole life.
Call was more worried about the grass situation. It was too sparse to support the herd for long.
Graze 'em up river, he said. Start tomorrow if we ain't back, but don't push 'em. Just let 'em graze along. You'll make the powder in a few days.
Newt felt very nervous when he saw the 3 men ride off. It was Lippy's fault that he felt so nervous. All morning, Lippy had done nothing but talk about how it felt to be scalped. Lippy hadn't been scalped and couldn't possibly know, but that didn't keep him from talking and scaring everybody. The horse thieves had gone southwest. Call thought that with luck they might catch them within a day, but in that he was disappointed. The country grew more barren as they rode. The only sign of life was an occasional buzzard and many, many rattlesnakes.
If we was to settle around here, we'd have to start a snake ranch, Augusta said.
They rested only a little while at night, and by mid-morning of the next day they were 100 miles from the herd, with no results in sight.
Hell, they'll be to the Wind River before we catch 'em, Augusta said. I've always heard the Wind River country was worse than the Pecos country when it comes to being dry.
We're better mounted than they are, Call said. We'll catch 'em. It was another long day, though, before they closed the gap.
You sure this is worth it for 12 horses? Augustus asked. This is the poorest darn country I ever saw. A chigger had starved to death out here.
Indeed, the land was bleak, a surface sometimes streaked with salt. There were ochre-colored ridges here and there, completely free of grass.
We can't start putting up with horse theft, Call said.
Dietz was ranging ahead, and in the afternoon they saw him coming back. The shimmering heat waves made him appear larger than he was.
Camp's up ahead, he said. They in a draw with a little water.
How many? Call asked.
Didn't get no count, Dietz said. Not many. Couldn't be many and live out here.
I say we wait for night and steal the nags back, Augusta said. It's too hot to fight. Steal them back and let the red man chase the white for a while.
If we wait for night, we might lose half the horses, Carl said. They'll probably post a better guard than we had.
I don't want to argue with you in this heat. If you want to go now, okay. We'll just ride in and massacre 'em.
Didn't see many men, Dietz said. Mostly women and children. They real poor, Captain.
What do you mean, real poor?
Means they starving, Dietz said. They done cut up one horse.
My God, Augusta said. You mean they stole them horses for meat?
That proved to be the case. They carefully approached the draw where the camp was and saw the whole little tribe gathered around the dead horse. There were only some 20 Indians, mostly women, children, and old men. Call saw only two braves who looked to be of fighting age, and they were no more than boys. The Indians had pulled the dead horses' guts out and were hacking them into slices and eating them. Usually there were dogs around an Indian camp, but there were no dogs around this time.
I guess these ain't the Mighty Plains Indians we've been hearing about, Augusta said.
The whole little tribe was almost silent, each person concentrating on eating. They were all thin. Two old women were cutting meat off the haunch, meaning to dry it, and two young men, probably the ones who had stolen the horses, had caught another and were preparing to cut its throat. To prevent this, Call drew his pistol and fired into the air.
"Oh, let's go," Augusta said. "We don't want to be shooting these people, although it would probably be a mercy. I don't think they even have guns."
"I didn't shoot nobody," Carl said. "But there are horses." At the shot, the whole tribe looked up, stunned. One of the young men grabbed an old single-shot rifle but didn't fire. It seemed to be the only firearm the tribe possessed. Call fired in the air again to scare them away from the horse, and succeeded better than he had expected to. Those who had been eating got to their feet, some with sections of gut still in their hands, and fled toward the four small ragged teepees that stood up the draw. The young man with a gun retreated too, helping one of the older women. She was bloody from the feast.
"They were just having a picnic," Augusta said. "We had a picnic the other day without nobody shooting at us."
"We can leave 'em two or three horses," Carl said. "I just don't want to lose that sorrel they were about to kill." In the tribe's flight, a child had been forgotten, a little boy barely old enough to walk. He stood near the neck of the dead horse, crying, trying to find his mother. The tribe huddled in front of the teepees, silent. The only sound for a moment was the sound of the child's crying.
"He blind," Dietz said.
Augusta saw that it was true. The child couldn't see where he was going, and a second later tripped over a pile of bloody horse guts, falling into them. Dietz, who was closest to the dead horse, walked over and picked the child up. The little blind boy kept wailing.
"Hush now," Dietz said. "You a mess. You done rolled in all that blood."
At that moment, there was a wild yell from the teepees, and Dietz looked up to see one of the young braves rushing toward him. He was the one who had picked up the rifle, but he had discarded the rifle and was charging with an old lance, crying his battle cry. Dietz held out the baby and smiled. The young man, no older than Newt, didn't need to cry any battle cry. Dietz kept holding the baby out toward the tribe and smiling, trusting that the young brave would realize he was friendly. The young man didn't need his lance. He could just take the squalling baby back to its mother. Call and Augustus thought, too, that the young man would probably stop once he saw that Dietz meant no harm. If not, Dietz could whop him. Dietz was a good hand-to-hand fighter. It was only at the last second that they both realized that the Indian wasn't going to stop.
His charge was desperate, and he didn't notice that Dietz was friendly. He closed at a run.
"Shoot him, Dietz!"
Call yelled, raising his own gun. Dietz saw, too, at the last second, that the boy wasn't going to stop. The young warrior wasn't blind, but the look in his eyes was as unseeing as the baby's. He was still screaming a war cry. It was unnerving in the stillness, and his eyes were filled with hate. The old lance just looked silly. Dietz held the baby out again, thinking the boy hadn't understood.
"Here, take him. I just helping him up," he said.
Only then he saw it was too late. The young man couldn't stop coming and couldn't stop hating either. His eyes were wild with hatred. Dietz felt a deep regret that he should be hated so by this thin boy when he meant no harm. He tried to sidestep, hoping to gain a moment so he could set the baby down and wrestle with the Indian and maybe calm him. But when Dietz turned, the boy thrust the lance straight into his side and up into his chest. Call and Augustus shot almost at the same time. The boy died with his hand still on the lance. They ran down to Dietz, who still had the baby in his hands, although he had over a foot of lance inside him.
"Would you take him, Captain?"
Dietz asked, handing Call the child.
"I don't want to sit him back in all that blood."
Then Dietz dropped to his knees. He noticed with surprise that the young Indian was near him, already dead. For a moment he feared that somehow he had killed him. But then he saw that his own gun was still holstered. It must have been the captain, or Mr. Gus. That was a sad thing, that the boy had had to die just because he couldn't understand that they were friendly. It was one more regret. Probably the boy had just been so hungry he couldn't think straight. Then he realized that he was on his knees and tried to get up, but Mr. Gus put a hand on his shoulder and asked him to wait.
"No, you don't have to get up yet, Dietz," Augustus said. "Just rest a minute."
Dietz noticed the handle of the lance protruding from his side. He knew the dead boy had put it there, but he felt nothing. The captain stood in front of him, awkwardly holding the Indian baby. Dietz looked at the captain sadly. He hoped that now the captain would see that he had been right to feel worried about leaving Texas. It was a mistake, coming into other people's country. It only disturbed them and led to things like the dead boy. People wouldn't understand, wouldn't know that they were friendly. It would have been so much better to stay where they had lived, by the old river. Dietz felt the longing to be back, to sit in the corrals at night and wonder about the moon. Many a time he had dozed off, wondering about the moon, whether the Indians had managed to get on it. Sometimes he dreamed he was on it himself, a foolish dream, but the thought made him sleepy. And with one more look of regret at the dead boy who hadn't understood that he meant no harm, he carefully lay down on his side. Mr. Gus knelt beside him. For a moment, Dietz thought he was going to try and pull the lance out, but all he did was steady it so the handle wouldn't quiver.
"Where's little Newt?" Dietz asked.
"Well, Newt didn't come, Dietz," Augustus said. "He's with the boys."
Then it seemed to Dietz that something was happening to Mr. Gus's head. It had grown larger. He couldn't see it all well. It was as if he were looking through water, as if he had come back to the old river and were lying on the bottom, looking at Mr. Gus through the shallow brown water. Mr. Gus's head had grown larger, was floating off. It was rising toward the sky like the moon. He could barely see it and then couldn't see it at all, but the waters parted for a moment, and he saw a blade or two of grass close to his eye. Then, to his relief, the brown waters came back and covered him again, deep this time and warm.
"Can't you take that lance out?" Call asked. He didn't know what to do with the baby, and there Dietz lay dying.
"I will in a minute, Call," Augustus said.
Just let him be dead for a minute.
Is he dead already?
Carl asked. Though he knew from long experience that such things happened quickly, he could not accept it in Dietz's case.
I guess it went to the heart, he added pointlessly.
Augustus didn't answer. He was resting for a moment, wondering if he could get the lance out or if he would just have to break it off or what. If he pulled it out, he might bring half of Dietz out with it. Of course, Dietz was dead. In a way, it didn't matter. Yet it did. If there was one thing he didn't want to do, was tear Dietz up.
"Can't you give that squalling baby to the women?" he asked. "Just set it down over there, and maybe they'll come and get it."
Carl took a few steps toward the huddled Indians, holding out the baby. None of the Indians moved. He went a few more steps and set the baby on the ground. Then he turned back and saw Augustus put a foot against Dietz's side and try to remove the lance, which did not budge. Augustus gave up and sat down beside the dead man.
"Oh, I can't do this today, Dietz," he said. "Somebody else will have to do it if it gets done."
Carl also knelt down by Dietz's body. He could not get over his surprise. Though he had seen hundreds of surprising things in battle, this was the most shocking. An Indian boy, who probably hadn't been 15 years old, had run up to Dietz and killed him. It must have shocked Augustus just as much, because he didn't have anything to say.
"I guess it's our fault," Carl said. "We should have shot sooner."
"I don't want to start thinking about all the things we should have done for this man. If you've got the strength to ride, let's get out of here."
They managed to break the lance off so it wouldn't wave in the air, and loaded Dietz's body on his horse. While Augustus was tying the body securely, Carl rounded up the horses. The Indians watched him silently. He changed his mind and cut off three of the horses that were of little account anyway. He rode over to the Indians.
"You better tie them three," he said. "Otherwise they'll follow us." "I doubt they speak English, Woodrow. I imagine they speak Ute. Anyway, we killed their best warrior. They're done for now unless they find some better country. Three horses won't last them through the winter."
He looked around at the parched country, the naked ridges where the earth had split from drought. The ridges were vari-colored, smudged with red and salt-white splotches, as if the fluids of the earth had leaked out through the cracks.
"Montana better not be nothing like this," he said. "If it is, I'm going back and dig up that goddamn Jake Spoon and scatter his bones."
They rode all night, and all the next day, and into the following night. Augustus just rode, his mind mostly blank, but Carl was sick with self-reproach. All of his talk of being ready, all of his preparation. And then he had just walked up to an Indian camp and let Josh Dietz get killed. He had known better. They all knew better. He had known men killed by Indian boys no older than 10, and by old Indian women who looked as if they could barely walk. Any Indian might kill you. That was the first law of the Rangers. And yet they had just walked in, and now Josh Dietz was gone. He had never called the man by his first name, but now he remembered Gus's foolish sign and how Dietz had been troubled by it. Dietz had finally concluded that his first name was Josh, and that was the way he would think of him from then on, Carl decided. He had been Josh Dietz. It deepened his sense of reproach that only a few days before, Josh Dietz had been so thoughtful as to lead his horse through the sandstorm, recognizing that he himself was played out. Then he had stood there with a rifle in his hands and let the man be killed. They had all concluded that the Indians were too starved down to do anything. It was a mistake he would never forgive himself.
"I think he knowed it was coming,"
Augustus said, to call surprise as they rode through the cracked valleys toward the Salt Creek.
"What do you mean, knowed it?" Call asked. "He didn't know it. It was just that one boy who showed any fight."
"I think he knowed it," Augustus said. "He just stood there waiting."
"He had that baby in his hands," Call reminded him.
"They could have dropped that baby."
They came back the second night to where the herd had been, only to find it gone. Josh Dietz had begun to smell.
"We could bury him here," Augustus said.
Call looked around at the empty range.
"We ain't going to find no churchyard if that's what you're looking for."
"Let's take him on," Call said.
"The men will want to pay their respects. I imagine we can catch them tonight." They caught the herd not long before dawn. Dish Bogat was the night herder who saw them coming. He was very relieved, for with both of them gone, the herd had been his responsibility. Since he didn't know the country, it was a heavy responsibility, and he had been hoping the bosses would get back soon. When he saw them, he felt a little proud of himself, for he'd kept the cattle on grass and had moved them along nicely.
"Morning, Cap'n," he said.
Then he noticed that something was wrong. There were three horses, not counting the stolen ones, but only two riders. There was something on the third horse, but it wasn't a rider. It was only a body.
"Who's that, Gus?"
he asked, startled.
"It's what's left of Dietz. I hope the cook's awake."
After feeling nothing for 2 days, he had begun to feel hungry. Newt had taken the middle watch and was sleeping soundly when dawn broke. He was using his saddle for a pillow and had covered himself with a saddle blanket as the nights had begun to be quite cool. The sound of voices reached him. One belonged to the captain, the other to Mr. Gus. Pocampo's voice could be heard, too, and Dish Bogat said something. Newt opened his eyes a moment and saw that they were all kneeling by something on the ground. Maybe they had killed an antelope. He was very drowsy and wanted to go back to sleep. He closed his eyes again, then opened them. It wasn't an antelope. He sat up and saw that Pocampo was kneeling down, twisting on something. Someone had been hurt, and Poe was trying to pull a stob of some kind out of his body. He stopped trying, and Dish, who had been holding the wounded man down, turned away suddenly, white and sick. When Dish moved, Newt saw Dietz. He was in the process of yawning when he saw him. Instead of springing up, he lay back down and pulled his blanket tighter. He opened his eyes and looked, and then shut them tightly. He felt angry at the men for having talked so loud that they had wakened him. He wished they would all die. That was the best they could do. He wanted to go back to sleep. He wanted it to be one of those dreams that you wake up from just as the dream gets bad. He felt that was probably what it was. When he opened his eyes again, he wouldn't see Dietz's body lying on the wagon sheet a few yards away. Yet it didn't work. He couldn't go back to sleep, and when he sat up, the body was there. Though if it hadn't been black, he might not have known it was Dietz. He looked and saw that P.I. knelt on the other side of the body, looking dazed. Far away toward the river, he saw the captain and Lippy digging. Mr. Gus sat by himself, near the cook fire, eating. The three horses had been unsaddled, but no one had returned them to the remuda. They grazed nearby. Most of the hands stood in a group near Dietz's feet, just looking as Pocampo worked. Finally, Pocampo gave up.
"Better to bury him with it," he said. "I would have liked to see that boy."
The lance went all the way to his collarbone. It went through the heart. Newt sat in his blankets, feeling alone. No one noticed him or spoke to him. No one explained Dietz's death. Newt began to cry, but no one noticed that either. The sun had risen, and everyone was busy with what they were doing,
Mr. Gus eating, the captain, Lippy digging the grave. Soupy Jones was repairing a stirrup and talking in subdued tones to Bert Borum. Newt sat and cried, wondering if Dietz knew anything about what was going on.